Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. And I'm trying to please to the call.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and we're bringing back the grain expert, Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator, as well as the goddess of grains herself. And of course, she's going to be brought to you by one of her suppliers, BarkBox. BarkBox.com. Yeah. Check them out. It's brought to you. She is brought to you by BarkBox, and you get one free extra month at BarkBox at www.getbarks.com. /the Bubba Show. All right, so you always tell me you're living the dream. What's up? Are you living the dream or the nightmare?
Oh man, well, it depends on who you ask. I mean, right now, of course I'm living the dream. I'm in North Central Iowa, and it's summertime, and you gotta love it. But from a trader standpoint, I am bored. But I don't know, bored and frustrated, which is pretty common for August, September in the grain trade. And I guess I should be used to it. But every year it gets here, and every year I remember how much I hate it.
Well,
so
I mean, it's a
here brutal, I sit being
bored. Well, but at least you got some free time with your baby. So there you go. Change. You can take your son out for a walk, right? You give him some fresh air.
Yeah. Get out of the office. I guess it's the goal that I do. But yeah, it's a frustrating time. I mean, more so than anything. It's not necessarily what I would call boring. It's more frustrating in my position here, because you get a lot of customers that maybe didn't take advantage of the recent rally, and they want to know what you think. Well, it's a hell of a lot easier to tell someone to sell $3.95 futures, you know, on corn, or $4.15 futures on corn than it is $3.80 or $3.65. But you always have this concern this time of year from a seasonal standpoint that you could in fact trade lower than what current levels are, and you will wish someday that you would have sold these, and so you have that in the back of your mind. And then from an elevator management standpoint, you're wondering, okay, what are we looking at in reality on yields? You know, should I be selling extra soybeans, for instance, at these basis levels to make sure that I have enough room in my plant for everything that's going to be harvested, or am I going to sell too much and then have empty space or see basis improve? And so, yeah, this time of year, it's just there's so many unknowns and so many questions that I think the frustrating factor of it all far trumps the boredom that you can feel on certain days.
Well, but this is the point, and I think this is the key, that, you know, that's why the greed factor, which you and I talk about often, is never a good thing when you're trading, especially if you're trading something that you own, that you're trying to protect, and not hedging it or selling some at $4 or $4.15 is always a mistake, even if they go higher. You know, one of the things I think that people don't quite understand is, you know, if you have a bunch, okay, let's just say you have 10,000 bushels, okay, I mean, whatever, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And you sell 5,000. Well, if they go straight up, so you could be pissed off that you're making less, but you're still making more money, right? Versus,
yeah, exactly. We
go ahead.
We always have the conversation about the loss of opportunity. It's not a loss of money. It's a loss of opportunity. Is what I try to get through to these guys. So you may sell 5,000 out of your 50,000 expected production, and if the market rallies 25 cents, you've lost the opportunity of making 25 cents on the 5,000 that you've sold. But you have not lost that 25 cents because you locked in $4. You know, and with the remaining bushels that you have, you can sell at that 25 cents higher, and you've gained that opportunity in those. No farmer, unless he decides to quit farming, is ever going to be out of the business of having bushels to sell, because there's always, if the market continues to rally, next year's crop to look at or things like that. But you're exactly right. I've, you know, selling $4 corn and watching it go higher is far better than not selling $4 corn and watching it all fall out of bed.
Well, and that's my point. I mean, look, you have to at some point take some money off the table. Again, it's I teach this all the time in equities. And, you know, we teach, and I have actually an automated hedging program for your equity portfolio. And, you know, when markets go straight up, we don't make as much as the market. I mean, I say it when I'm selling it to somebody or I'm pitching it, I say, look, there's times you're only going to make 60 cents on the dollar. But at the end of the day, over the next 5 years, you're going to make a hell of a lot more by doing the right thing all the time instead of trying to pick and choose, because nobody is good enough. Not even Angie Setzer herself can pick tops and bottoms of markets. What do you think?
Oh, I agree 100%. I mean, I'm not going to go back through the bajillion tweets that I put on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, when we were at the higher end of the recent range, I put out there that it's time to stop guessing where the market's going to go and start marketing for profitability. And I still agree with that. You know, this year, if you'd asked me, and you did, and my guess was that we would see 440 to 450 as an upside. We did not, or at least we haven't at this point in the year. And without a surprise from the USDA next week, I think we're going to be hard pressed to do so much ahead of harvest at this point. Just because the USDA doesn't really have a track record of being overly aggressive on yield adjustments. Now, take it with a grain of salt when I talk about the USDA, and I'll talk about how we have to adhere to what the USDA says. Not because I think they're always right or that they trump everything, but they do give us they do give us direction from an outside interest standpoint. So to sit here and have every farmer say that the crop is hurt and that the production is going to be lower and that prices should go higher makes sense. They're out walking the fields. They're doing all the things that they're doing. I mean, we've seen some private analyst estimates come in that the crop is lower and that the price should be higher. But here we sit. You know, we just got the lowest yield estimate that I've seen thus far, and one that was somewhat shocking from a private group out there, that a 162.8. I mean, that would drop production, you know, 800 million bushel or so, and the corn markets basically mustered a 2 cent rally out of it. The buyers just are not here right now because they are waiting, in my opinion, for the USDA to confirm some of these beliefs out here, because the last few years we've had beliefs in what the USDA will say. They've disagreed, and we've ended up with a plethora of what you would call bearish surprises. And whether you agree with them or not, they're the ones driving the car at this point.
Well, they're waiting for the USDA to give away ice in the winter like they always do. You know how that is. You know me in federal agencies. I got no use for them. I don't like them. They're never right, and their expectations are never right. They're always full of crap. But that's besides the point. At the end of the day, here we sit on extremely light volume, and it obviously volume has declined almost as fast as the market. If we go back to, I'd say the peak of volume was probably in the beginning of June, but this thing we saw June, you know, volume in corn, you know, starting, let's say, you know, end of June, early August, and almost daily we now have gotten lower volume. And of course, pretty soon there'll be no volume and we'll all be sleeping because there is nothing to do. And I think that some of the selling has come from some panic. Again, it's those who missed and tried to puke out. But in the meantime, we're going to stop out of our break because I got to let you go all the way through. I don't want to cut you off in the middle. We're with the goddess herself, my friend, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. She's being brought to you by BarkBox. That's BarkBox.com. And to receive one free month to get BarkBox.com, you go to getbarkbox.com/TheBubba Show. Again, that's getbarkbox.com/TheBubba Show. You receive a free extra month. And I know you use it, Angie. Give me a 10-second summation of how good it is.
Oh, it's awesome. My dog thinks it's the greatest. And if you have a dog that chews apart toys in a day, get the BarkBox toys because they will last a long time. It's a great service. We've had it for year and a half now.
All right, and we're going to stop by here for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Barbaro with Angie Setzer. We will make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download The Bubba Show every single day. Don't forget, especially when Angie's on and all Angie's friends, I appreciate you retweeting me all the time. And, of course, you get the Sporting Edge there as well with Xander, who runs on the weekends. And go to BubbaTrading.com and watch Bubba's Bottom Line. Pretty good video. I may win an Emmy someday for my, or at least I might see a cardiac surgeon. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break with more from Angie. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Ty Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And this segment is being brought to you by Casper.com. The mattress people receive $50 towards any mattress purchase at www.caspertrial.com/the Bubba Show. Okay, Angie, so volume sucks. The markets are quiet. Yeah. Nobody cares. I said there was a little bit of panic selling the last few days. And, you know, I was on Rural Rally Radio on Wednesday morning, and I was also on RFD TV. And I said, you know what? That rally's pretty nasty. I don't like it. It doesn't look good. I hate when they rally overnight anyways. I'd rather see them flush out a little bit in the morning and then see some buyers. And, of course, we saw it weaken the entire day. What do you think? And is that a good assessment from your opinion?
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a fan. You know, when volume's low already, and then we rally on a low volume overnight market, you know, on a private yield estimate, I'm not surprised. Now, of course, you always anticipate that one of these days maybe something will click, and one of these high side sort of night trades will lead into something bigger than what we've seen in the past. But no, I agree completely right now. I think this is what we're going to run into. For one, you've got like you said, the panic selling. So you've got a group out there that have significant ownership, and every day that goes by is another day they're going to be a step closer to harvest. There are pockets out there that have some pretty phenomenal looking production capabilities, and they had a record crop a year ago. You know, we don't hear about it too awful much, but those farmers are the ones that are looking out and realizing that they're going to have to make a move here pretty soon, and probably are going to start liquidating some of what they're holding, you know, which farmer selling should put a little bit of pressure on that market. But then you just have the outside, the outside speculators and things like that are looking at it from a seasonal standpoint, are looking at it from an overall USDA expectation standpoint, and all of the old stories that we've been hearing, you know, for the last 3 years on the oversupply and not enough demand and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, that whole entire cloud is still looming over top of the grain markets, whether it's wheat or corn, you know, or anything like that. This whole narrative of we have too much for the demand that we have in place has been very, very prevalent in the market structure for the last couple of years, and it's going to be hard to shake. If you're not on top of what's happening from a day-to-day change, you're going to assume that it's the same story, different day type deal. And I think that's why we're stuck here at this point is even if we do see a reduction in yield, like that private estimate pointed out yesterday, we still have a near 1.6 carryout, 1.6 billion bushel carryout, which is more than adequate. And in the corn trade, a billion bushel was tend to thought to be pipeline. Now, if we do, if we take that 1.6, if that's realized, and we discover that there is some production issues developing in South America or something like that as we move ahead, it can change. You know, the whole global picture is going to be adjusted. But there are so many ifs right now in this market setup that, as a buyer, I alluded to a week ago or so that if you were a speculator or someone that was coming in to look at buying this thing, it's almost like, would you say, hit me to the dealer in blackjack if you had a 17 or an 18. Is there a chance that it could be a winning bet? Sure, of course there is. But is there a chance that it could be, cause you to bust? Yeah. And so, certain personality types will say, hit me. Others will say, I'm going to wait. I'm going to go trade something that's guaranteed or a little bit more likely to make me money. And I think that's part of the reason we're not seeing any outside interest right now it's not a clear sign at this point in time that buying this market at certain price levels will equate to a winning trade down the road.
Now, I still kind of like the grains. I'm very concerned about soybeans myself. We talked about, I said $10 was my number, and of course we cut through it on the way up as quick as we could. And of course now, once we broke off of it to the downside, it looked pretty ugly. And I don't know, I'm pretty concerned. I think that, the next big key spot here is like 940. What do you think in soybeans? I know you were a little bit negative as well. And what do you think now? What's your read? Are you still negative, or what are you thinking?
I'm neutral at this point in time. I think that this is somewhat between 950 and 975, I think is somewhat of an equilibrium type price at this point. You know, I would say Basis is telling me otherwise. Basis is telling me that the price should come down just because Basis in our neck of the woods has stunk so bad. But, you know, I do worry that the upside potential is gone at this juncture. You know, there is some concern out there. Beans are made in August, of course. And so there is some concern out there that dry areas that could remain dry over the next couple weeks may see some pretty substantial loss in yield potential. But I can tell you in our neck of the woods right now, things look really good out here in north central Iowa. My customers in Michigan are praying for a rain. If they get the rain, the crop will be made. And that's really where we're at right now. The hardest part with beans, you know, is a 2 bushel to the acre national swing makes a substantial adjustment in carry out outlook. So it's going to remain, I think, exceptionally volatile. But right now, based on the fact that we're seeing cooler than normal temperatures, or at least are seeing cooler than normal temperatures expected throughout much of the Corn Belt for the next couple weeks, and even though we are dry, you know, based on temperatures alone, I would say yields should be relatively decent, you know, which would put some pressure to the downside on the bean market overall. But I think we find support in areas we found support before, you know, 940, 925, you know, stuff like that. I don't necessarily think that the bean market has to completely fall out of bed, simply because we're still getting market share when a lot of folks thought that Brazil would be stepping in and taking over, you know, as king of the exporters. We're still seeing that export market share remain. Crush demand's good as livestock, you know, livestock herds stay large and meal demand is positive. You know, I think that there are reasons that you can say, okay, the market shouldn't move much below, you know, 9.25, 925, I mean, on the November, but there are tons of reasons why it shouldn't be trading much above $10 as well. So I would say, you know, based on what we know now, we're at a somewhat fair market price. But having said that, you know, like I said, we're looking at 88 million acres, 88.5 million acres. You know, so a 2 bushel to the acre swing is 177 bushel, 177 million bushels, excuse me. And that takes us from a 480 carryout, you know, down to a 300 million, or it could take us up to a 600 million. And so you can get a big swing out of what isn't necessarily a large yield adjustment. And for that reason alone, we're probably going to have days where we are down 40, you know, even though they don't make much sense. And then we'll turn around and have days where, you know, if the forecast looks as though it's going to introduce some hot weather or something of that nature, you know, we could be up 25 or so. But right now, based on what I'm seeing weather-wise, you know, most of it is pretty benign and cool. And if we can get some rain, this crop should be pretty substantial at this point.
Now, do me a favor. You've mentioned a couple of times, and for those who don't understand, what's the crush? What does it mean?
Soybean crush. So you take a bushel of soybeans and you produce soybean meal and soybean oil out of it. So a 160-pound bushel of soybeans produces 44 pounds of soybean meal, 11 pounds of soy oil, and 3 pounds of soy hulls. You feed the meal and the hulls mainly to cattle, but meal can be fed to any animal out there, really. And then soy oil, of course, can be used in biodiesel production, food, you know, any of those things. And soy oil demand continues to be exceptionally strong. And with the, I'm not an expert in that, court ruling last week, you know, against the EPA on their adjustments to the renewable fuels deal there. But from the looks of that, soy oil should see some continued strong demand for biodiesel as well. So it's a very popular product out there, and it's what's keeping soy demand strong, or at least crush demand strong, is because of that demand for the byproducts that we're seeing out there.
Gotcha. That's a big trade. That's the crush. I just want everybody to know, because obviously it's not something that, you know, you would normally, most people have in their normal vocabulary, right? Anyways, we're going to stop out of our break. Yeah. We're with Angie Setzer, the goddess herself. And of course, she's in God's country, Iowa. But in the meantime, she's also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And she's being brought to you by Casper Mattress, the ones who give you the perfect night's sleep. pressure-relieving memory foam and a breathable springy layer come together to create the perfect sleep surface. And, of course, you can take advantage of their offer by going to CasperTrial.com. Again, that's CasperTrial.com/TheBubba Show, and you get a $50 off any mattress purchase. In the meantime, go to LibertyTalk.fm. You can download The Bubba Show. You didn't get $50, but you can download The Bubba Show and The Sporting Edge. And we'll be right back with more from the goddess, Andy Setzer, the Vice President of Grains, at Citizens Elevator, and me, The Bubba Show, Todd Bob Orr. We'll be right back after the break with more. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess, the vice president of Grains at Citizens Elevator, and the person from God's country who's always living the dream. In the meantime, she's going to be brought to you by BarkBox.com. So to get one extra free month at BarkBox, go to www.getbarkbox.com/The Bubba Show. All right, Angie, so I got a concern. I got a problem. I got a lot of problems, but I got a concern, and I want to run this by you. The dollar is weak. Now, I was on this dollar, as you remember, since it was 104 or $4, and now it's 94, 92. And I thought that, you know, 94 would probably be a pretty good spot to step in, and we'd do a little bit of strength in the dollar. Not that I'm worried about the dollar going down, because, again, I'm the kind of guy that won't necessarily cover it 94 reverse. I'll wait until I get a signal to buy dollars. But in the meantime, I'm concerned that the dollar-denominated products, such as grains, are not reacting well to this dollar that is basically free going globally. And to me, that is the one thing that gives me some worry. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I don't know. I have such a hard time, because it matters. We've seen obvious indications of it mattering when we've seen strength. At least the thought process is that it's mattered when we've seen strength in the dollar, simply because it's impacted our ability to be competitive out there with exports. You know, I think when it comes down to it, though, the dollar trade will be important to watch. But in the whole scope of things, the concern over currency conversion tends to go out the window when you're dealing with the ability to provide a good, high-quality product into the global marketplace if someone else is unable to do so in a timely manner, if that makes sense. So, well, the dollar was a big conversation about wheat here these last couple years. You know, everyone, we're going to lose wheat trade, and we did. We lost a substantial amount of wheat exports over the last year or so. But I would argue a lot of that had more to do with the fact that other countries had enough supply to where they could offer it out much cheaper, you know, dollar be damned kind of deal than anything else. But it is something that you are watching, you know, out of the corner of your eye, and it is a concern there. I specifically watch it versus the loonie, because I trade in the Michigan market, and the Ontario back and forth is hugely impacted by the loonie trade. Strength in the loonie recently, I mean, we've seen basis swings as much as 35, 40 cents over the last couple weeks as we've seen shifts in currency there. So it is something to monitor, and definitely something that could hurt, especially if we were to see the real the real weekend, you know, as it had here a couple years back, because they have a good substantial supply, and farmers, you know, of course, love to be able to sell in dollars there if their currency starts to fall out of bed. And right now we do know that the Brazilian farmer is sitting on a lot of supply, and doing so in a lot of ways as a hedge against inflation. And things of that nature. So if you were to see a real shift take place in the currency down there, the conversion rate, and see our dollars start to strengthen and the real kind of fall out of bed, then suddenly we lose this market share that I was just talking about in soybean exports, and worse yet, in corn exports. We definitely need to see a continuation of strong exports to chew through, you know, unless we take the crop below a 162, you know, and then exports maybe aren't as vital as what they are right now. But it'll definitely need to be monitored. You know, me specifically, I'm watching it in our food grade program, our food non-GMO food grade soybean program. I watch the yen versus the dollar, because we trade a lot into Japan directly on that side, and we actually you know, we'll hedge our currency risk sometimes to help offset the loss in value on the sales side. And then on corn side, I'm of course watching it, you know, the loonie versus the buck on my direct basis sales. But from an overall standpoint with what's going on, you know, with the real versus the dollar will be vital to me as we move ahead.
Okay, so how much oversupply is there in the world? Just your opinion.
Do you include China, or do you throw China out?
Well, I don't know if you can ever count on China for anything. I don't think you ever get accurate numbers. Right? I mean, yeah, I mean, China. I just don't think you ever get an accurate report from them. You never know what the hell they're doing. I mean, you know, they've got hidden cities that have been around that they're still showing us full value. So in what we would consider true competitive products, how much supply is out? How much oversupply is out there on a regular basis? Because in my opinion, I keep hearing, growth is good, which I don't believe, but growth is good. We got big demand, blah, 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 blah. And of course, we got a growing population. So how could we not be using more? Yeah. How could we not be consuming more? So what is the oversupply? I don't want the exact bushel, but just in your opinion, what percentage of the world is oversupplied?
I don't think we're oversupplied really when it comes down to it. Like I said, I mean, if you look at it from a percentage standpoint, and that's why I asked the question about China, China is believed to be sitting on 41%, I believe, on the last numbers of the world's corn, and 48% of the world's wheat. So you take that out of play, which a lot of people say you can't. You can't count them for demand and then remove them for supply. But, you know, if you don't think that that's necessarily there, which I tend to question a little bit myself, it takes this boogeyman, this 1,000-pound elephant out of the room, because there's always been this concern that all of a sudden China is going to turn into an exporter. We've heard this conversation for multitudes of years now, is that China's been such a big producer, they're going to turn into an exporter and they'll be able to beat us at our own game. I think that's bunk, you know, but it is something that has bloomed in the marketplace. The common concern that a bear will bring up is, oh, we're oversupplied, we have too much. The reality is we really don't. Now, do we have a substantial amount of carryover in North and South America when it comes down to it? Yeah. You know, even you're seeing, you know, the Russian government start to release vintage, which is my favorite term for old grain, you know, 2013 grain out of government supplies and things like that to try to get some turnover there. So, you know, from an overall standpoint, based on the demand we're seeing and the growth in demand that we're seeing, I don't think we're necessarily oversupplied. I think we have enough there to maybe help us limp through if we were to see a major production problem develop. Okay. But from an outsider looking in standpoint, you know, like I said, you can't really throw China out the window. But the reality is nearly half of what is considered to be that oversupply is sitting in their hands. And we don't even know if it's a real number or not. You know, in addition to that, China is of the extra grain they're holding, they're looking to really ramp up internal or domestic demand for corn. And they've actually opened the doors now and changed their policy that they will allow outside investment to come in, you know, and start to work within ethanol production and other industrial ways of chewing through some of those quote unquote corn stocks that they have. So, you know, to me, I don't, I don't think we are oversupplied by any means. I just think we may have adequate supplies for the current pricing range that we've been trading in, you know, as of late.
So, of course, we hear the Fed whining for inflation all the time. Are you worried about deflation in the grains?
Inflation in the grains is a good thing.
No, I mean,
are
you worried about deflation in the grains? I mean, again,
deflation. Yeah, I mean, I think we've already.
You think we're already deflating? I'm sure, but my question is just if we don't have like an overabundance of supply, you know, any day there could be a weather event that could still create problems. But obviously, we know a lot of them happen in the bins anyways. That they're storing like their bank account, as we've talked about before. But any day we could see a change, and if we're not dramatically oversupplied like we are in oil, it could change prices rapidly. But in the meantime, prices keep dribbling lower.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that the common idea right now, or a common belief right now, is that prices should continue to dribble lower because no one's concerned that we don't have the production there. Now, if we see that transition take place to where we go from believing that we have a 172 bushel the acre yield to dropping it to a 160 or lower or something like that on corn, and we see issues develop in South America with production, you know, like I said, I mean, we can easily go at this point in time from believing that we have too much right now to not having near enough. Now, you know, I would point towards the Minneapolis spring wheat market as a great example of that. Now, of course, you know, your high protein wheat demand is a little more inelastic than perhaps your corn demand when all is said and done. But, you know, we've seen how quickly you can go from having too much to the concern that you don't have enough and what it can do to a market when that happens.
No, I know. Look, you know, again, it's always the same old story. And the grains and every other market is no different than the equity market. Right now, everybody says we're never going down again, or in the grains case, we're not going up. Mm-hmm. We get too much. All these, you know, everybody's shirking their shoulders, right? And the grain and the equities are happy because they're going up and they don't have to worry about it. So they know the market is never going to break again, right? They're going to maybe go to Dow 1 billion. And of course, everything else is a problem.
Yeah.
But we're going to come back with Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator, also the goddess of grain at Goddess of Grain on Twitter. Make sure you check her out. She's got a lot of stuff, and she still promised to get me on TV in Iowa, but I'm still waiting. But I had to give her a little zing when she couldn't respond. She's being brought to you by BarkBox, and of course, BarkBox. She told yourself they have great toys and great snacks, and of course, they don't rip the toys up right away, so you get a chance to make your buck last and to receive 1 month free. Go to getbarkbox.com/TheBubba Show. Again, that's getbarkbox.com/TheBubba Show to receive a free extra month, and of course, you have to go to libertytalk.fm. We don't give a free month. I give you free every day. So it's freedom, and you get the Bubba Show and the Sporting Edge. In the meantime, make sure that you check out Angie Setzer on Twitter. Make sure you catch her on Iowa TV, where I'm looking to go. And this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bob Orange will be right back after the break with more. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. So, Angie, I see some things going on out there and that aren't great, but I want to talk about, I know it's not necessarily your wheelhouse or not, but obviously you're in the business, and I think the meats, you know, I don't understand what's going on. Like, for example, let's start with the hog market, because they're like kablooey in what they're doing. It makes no sense. And if you're a fundamental trader and you look at what's been going on with the bellies and everything else, it's like prices are falling. But yet the August hogs continue to push higher. And the spread between August and October is like the widest it's been in forever.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just pulling it up right now. And that to me tells me, you know, the inverse that you're seeing in the market. I mean, right now it's it's pretty substantial. You got August train at 82, you got October train at basically 66 and a half or so. And yeah, so that, you know, it, for those not in the commodity market, what do you guys call backwardation? That's what I always kind of chuckle a little bit. But a market inversion tends to tell you that the supply is wanted in the market up front, of course, which you guys know, and that necessarily we don't believe that the supply or the market needs to be overly bullish for October, I guess you could say. You know, to me, your biggest chunk of open interest is sitting there in the October. So you look at that. That's the market structure that I will, you know, that I tend to look at is where we are or what we're looking at on that side. But, you know, for hogs right now, you know, it's there's this idea that we may not have enough to meet the front month's demand, or we don't have enough availability. The fact is, though, a hog is ready for market or ready to for slaughter, or you can improve your herd size in about 6 months. So it's a very big difference than in cattle, where if you discover that you don't have enough cattle available, you know, you've got to wait almost 2 years in order to see the cattle that are being born today become available into the market to become meat. So it's a little bit of a different story, I guess you could say, and perhaps the short-term fundamentals are telling guys to buy the front months and not necessarily look at buying the back months. But, you know, like I said, I tend to follow the market with the biggest chunk of open interest in it. You know, and looking at October right now, we're basically at the lowest level we've been at in quite some time, you know, since mid-June, basically, but we haven't quite reached the low that we had in place there the end of April. So the hog market, you know, if you look back through it, it tends to be relatively range-bound, and then all of a sudden you'll get a volatile shift lower and a volatile swing higher, and then we kind of slowly waft lower and do it all over again. And I think you'll see a continuation of that. I think the market really struggles with the fact that we have such a huge demand for protein, globally speaking, and that we are one of the best suppliers of good quality meat that's available for export when needed. So I think we always struggle with the idea of demand. We've gotten accustomed to a certain amount or a large amount of demand here, especially in New Mexico. And then, of course, there's the concern, what happens if that goes away? Personally, I don't think it goes away, but it's another one of those markets that China's heavily involved in, of course, because they're one of our biggest customers on the export side, but they're also a huge producer on their own side. So it's from a hog standpoint overall, you know, really when it comes down to it, like I said, I think you're stuck in a range, and you know, you look out and the market is telling you that they want available supplies brought in as quickly as possible. But that August board also is going to go off here in
12 days,
another 10 days or so. And you know, it's kind of like during delivery when your wheat market, you know, to try to entice bringing cash supplies in and wheat or something, you'll see the front month rally substantially while the back month just sits tight. So I think that's part of it too.
Now, typically we always have this backwardation, as you like to say, in going in from right. August. Well, it's pretty typical in hogs, especially from August to October, December. It's typically, you know, mm-hmm. December is typically the lowest part of the year, right? I mean, that's pretty typical.
Yeah.
Now, why is that? Why is that consistently always the pattern? Is there just that much of a lack of demand in October in December, or is there a reason why they're always lower or cheaper in that time of year?
Yeah, your October through December, you tend to come out of that what tends to be that grill, your big grilling season sort of demand. I think in hogs there, and like I said, I'm not an active hog trader by any means. I watch it, but you see a seasonal standpoint where you get the Easter rally. You know what I mean? We get that Easter demand, and then all of a sudden you get the idea that you have your grilling season, your BLT demand picks up in the summertime, right? So you have all of this, you know, what's better than a bacon, lettuce, tomato sandwich.
My opinion, peanut butter and jelly. That's my, that's my sandwich.
Yeah,
but I get you.
Yeah. So you have this strong summer demand, and that starts to disappear. You know, and in addition to that, you have a larger available. What tends to happen is you get that Easter rally, and you see perhaps an increase in bread stocks, you know, in bread supplies. by bred, I mean BRED, you know, hog breeding, you'd see an increase in that because, of course, the market is stronger. So people are wanting to produce more hogs. And so you up your production and your available supply comes to the market, then, you know, August. If you start in April, your available supply of hogs to come to the market is going to be available in October. So you tend to see, you know, perhaps some encouragement of an increase in supply because of that Easter ham rally that you see, and that tends to come to the market here, you know, 6 months later into that October time frame, which happens to coincide with that dissipating, you know, summer demand.
Okay, so now, many people don't know this, but my dad was a peddler and sold meat, okay, and my mom was actually from a farm. But in the meantime, you know, I used to teach my dad way back in the day that, you know, you got to start loading up on corned beef, you know, beef brisket in January, because you know that St. Patrick's Day, there's going to be huge demand and prices are going up. So why don't you store it and freeze it, okay? And you can then deliver it in for St. Patrick's Day and you can make a lot more money. And he agreed and we started to do that. So why don't the people in using hogs, why don't they buy some when they're cheap in December and in October and hold them, because typically they pick up a value back again in February. Why don't they do that? Just out of curiosity.
Well, I think you tend to see some of that because I think you'll see your freezer supply shift accordingly, where you will see some folks take and hold. But from an overall standpoint, whether or not the hog market itself actually looks at that and trades accordingly, it's kind of one of those things where the grain market always thinks that it needs to go lower in September because farmers are going to be bringing stuff to market once harvest starts. You know what I mean? Like, they may not necessarily be doing that right away. You may see farmers holding back supplies, but the market will still trade in a certain way just because it's been taught to do so for all of time.
Taught wrong.
I mean, it's been beat into your head. It's the same thing as right now. If I were to tweet out something about holding soybeans at harvest time instead of putting corn in my bin space, I'd have 100 responses of how stupid that is. Reality is, it makes me money every year. Reality also, at the same time, though, is you're supposed to sell your beans at harvest and make your money on corn holding. Doesn't work for me. But that's the thing, is that, you know, you may see some people doing what makes sense for them, but the market thought overall may be in moving in a different direction.
And Angie Setzer, as always, I appreciate you. You did a great job informing everybody about what we need to do. This is Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains from Citizens Elevate, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevate. Angie, thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I always enjoy it. It always goes by way too quick, too.
We'll do it again. But in the meantime, you were brought to, just so you know, you were brought to by Audible Books. And, of course, you can get, they've got 180,000 titles to choose from. You get a free 30-day download. And to get your free download, you can go to www.audibletrial.com/The Bubba Show. Again, that's www.audibletrial.com/The Bubba Show. And you can download one of our regular guests, Daniel DiMartino Booth, fed up, because, you know, Bubba, he's always fed up. Anyways, this is the Bubba Show. We enjoyed spending our day with Angie, learning about the grains and the livestock markets. The Bubba Show, top of boards. We'll see you back here tomorrow, everybody. Same time, same station. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time. The Bubba Show, top of boards. Good night, everybody.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.